Well, then
you're not ready yet.
Then why don't you?
This committee, Environment and Energy Committee, will come back to order. And before we resume with Senator Scalzi's bill, I just wanted to say that for those who are here for Senate File 1414, the Sustainable Forest Bill, we have a delete everything amendment in the packets, and the original bill is in the packets. But there were some things deleted in the delete everything from the original bill that weren't supposed to be deleted. And so I was going to ask Senate Counsel, or Mr. Knopf, to go through which sections we were going to be adding back into the delete all amendment to Senate File 1414. I just thought it would be appropriate now, especially for those who wish to testify on it, to hear what the differences were so that they can incorporate that back into the delete everything amendment.
Mr. Chairman and members, what I'll do is between now and when this bill is taken up, we'll need to do an oral amendment to add back in a few things. There's one section in the bill that's already being modified, and it has to do with it's actually in the amendment. It has to do with the eligibility requirements. It's section 5 of the A4 amendment, and in there, in the original bill, there was going to be a provision that asked the claimant to register, that the claimant needs to register with the commissioner and who has concurred that the land is qualified. So we'll need to add that back in so the commissioner concurs that the land is qualified, and the commissioner shall annually provide the county assessor's verification information. This was part of the auditor's report to make sure the commissioner of natural resources is verifying that these lands are being treated properly. And then the other thing that's not in the delete everything amendment is the section that deals with the Commissioner of Natural Resources certifying to the Commissioner of Revenue the annual incentive payment each claimant is entitled to receive. So I think the thought is to add those in. It's that Commissioner of Natural Resources check on the system to make sure that these people are eligible to receive the payment. So it'll be a matter of a page and line amendment to the eligibility requirements, and then adding back in section nine, from the original bill that deals with 290C.08, and I'm pretty sure that's not in the that shouldn't be in the delete all amendment. I'll have to modify them slightly because in the original bill, the program commissioner was being modified to be Commissioner of Natural Resources, and now we're keeping as Commissioner of Revenue. So these are just some minor tweaks, but it'll be a matter of adding back in those provisions on dealing with the Commissioner of Natural Resources. So I can work on that in the meantime while you're.
And I hope those who are testifying on it can at least get a sense of what that was, but it would be helpful if we can get something more precise, more helpful, because everybody's going to be lost if we're struggling that way. So if you can work on that. In the meantime, we're going to continue with Senator Scalzi's bill and other bills that come up before that one. Senator Scalzi, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this on?
It is on. I know you're losing your voice, but we can hear you.
Okay, great. I just wanted to, we kind of rushed before when we were at the earlier committee hearing, and I wanted to thank the authors of this bill, Senators Ingebrigtsen, Saxhog, Schmidt, and Benson, because they all have some very good stories regarding recycling. And so I really thank them for helping craft this bill. And what I want to do at this time is talk a little bit about the amendments. We had, I think, gone through the bill when Commissioner Reinhart was here. And in your packet, you have the bill, and I think you have copies of the amendments. I have the A3, the A4, and then there's an A2 as well that we'll be talking about related to state government's use of recycling, which also was a part of the legislative auditor's report.
So, Senator Scalzi, did you want to move the A3 amendment first and your A4 amendment?
Yes, and those would be authors. And I have someone from the county group who could speak to those amendments. Victoria Reinhart could not make it here, but I have Trudy Richter here from the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board, which is a grouping of the six counties in the metro area that have brought this bill forth.
Where is it?
are A, 2, and 3 in the packets?
I think A4 maybe was not in the packet. It was produced this morning.
We will make A4 sure that
A4 is in here.
A4 is in A2 and 3 or not.
Right.
So let's start with A4. Does everybody have A4 amendment?
I have all three.
Yep.
I have all
three. Okay, those who don't have A4.
A4
was
in the packets from last
session. Okay, from last session. Senator, does everybody have the A4 amendment?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, well, we will act on that, and if you can make sure the others are around everywhere.
We can start with the A3. I think they have that one for sure.
They have A4. They have A4, not A3. So Senator Scalzi moves the A3. Okay, Senator Scalzi moves the A4 amendment. That was one of the author's amendments. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Does everybody have the A3 amendment?
I have the A2.
Should have been the last stuff he had from previous one.
Yeah. Anyway.
I have it from yesterday.
We're getting it. This is also author's amendment. Put the bill in the shape she wants. The A3 amendment, is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And Mr. Chair, did you want to do the A2?
Sure, we could do the A2, and I'll explain where this one came
Thank
from
you.
Since Senator Scalzi is losing her voice. And
Thank
I
you.
Think she was willing to offer this. Because the rest of the bill came from the counties, the auditor's report said that the state government was not doing a good job of recycling in public facilities, and I know both the House Chair, Representative McNamara, and I had both been complaining about we should be a better example here rather than the follower, and we've met with the department some, and then after we met with the department and so on, we actually found out the legislative auditor's report made a big deal of this on their own, unrelated to what we were doing. And so this was one to try and make the state government serve as a model for this. And I'm told there may be some testimony on this, so I'm willing to maybe if you want to move it, but we'll take testimony on that at the appropriate time.
Yes, so, I would move the A2 amendment.
And we will wait for testimony on that. But now, why don't you continue with the bill, any part of the bill you wanted, and when we...
I would like to have Trudy Richter explain the two authors' amendments.
Ms. Richter,
and then
ahead.
I believe we'll have also some testimony from Mr. Cardinal on behalf of the haulers.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and please speak to either the amendments or the rest of the bill, whatever your presentations are on the bill now.
Thank you very much, Senator Marty and members of the committee. I'm here on behalf of the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board, and you heard from our chair this morning, Commissioner Victoria Reinhart, and she apologized for not being able to come back. We do have two authors' amendments that we worked very closely with other stakeholders, including the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the hauler community, so that this is a bill that will work for everyone and all counties statewide. The A3 changes are to clarify that we want to be able to also, when we're working with organics, to look at food waste prevention. And I think you'll recall from the testimony this morning that Second Harvest is an example of tons and tons of food that was prevented from being waste by being able to be put back into the community in a public health safe manner and utilized. I know it's things like Great Harvest at the end of the day contributes their bread to Second Harvest. It hasn't ever been touched or used, and then they in turn can distribute it to families. So we want that to be included as something the counties can work with organizations such as that. The other change is we'd also like, when it comes to compostable materials, source-separated compostable materials, be able to further explore programming that includes anaerobic digestion. We needed the change to say that we will support anaerobic digestion for some SCORE program monies only if it's going to produce a Class 1 or Class 2 compost. Anaerobic digestion pulls the gas off of the organic stream but leaves a lot of material afterwards that still needs to be managed, and we want to make sure that instead of then being landfilled, that can be managed as a compost product. And that's why the agency asked us to clarify that. And that's those two changes in A3.
Okay.
Do you want to take a fourth this
time?
Sure,
go ahead. We put them on the bill, but we're just explaining why they were.
For A4, my colleague, Doug Carnival, has agreed. This is the one we worked on with the Hollar community to address their concerns related to the study that the county feels is extremely important to be able to increase recycling markets in the state of Minnesota with our increased recycling goals.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Carnival, represent the National Waste and Recycling Association. We are very supportive of the provisions of the bill. We, as you know, have been in the recycling business in Minnesota for many years and have always been supportive of anything that increases recycling, and the provisions of this bill we think are supportive of that. The idea of providing more funding for recycling out of the general fund from the solid waste tax is something we have supported for many years and continue to support. The other provisions of the bill, we also support the changes that we have suggested are changes simply in the study to make sure that there's not much intrusion with respect to analyzing what happens in the private sector. These are all very competitive businesses, and the idea of the state getting involved and looking at our equipment and making analysis of that seems something that was really not necessary to continue to deal with market development. We want to work with the agency and the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board to ensure that there's more market development and don't have any problems with the expenditure of money. We were able to work with Senator Benson, who's a co-author of the bill as well, explained our concerns, and these amendments take care of those concerns. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carnival. Questions for either Ms. Richter or Mr. Carnival? I guess not. Senator Scalzi, continuing with the bill.
And actually, we've gone through the bill.
I mean, with your witnesses, if you have others.
Yes, well,
Kirk Kudelka
is here if needed for questions.
Okay. Does the agency, why don't we have the other witnesses come up and.
That's the only other one that I have.
Okay, and
Mr.
we
Chair.
Do have a couple others who had asked to speak to it, including, I think, agency Department of Administration wanted to speak to the A2 before we take it up. Go ahead, Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you. For the record, my name is Kirk Kudelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, including land policy. And I want to thank the author for the bill and want to voice our support for the changes for the use of the SCORE dollars for organics management, allowing that to be used higher up on the hierarchy, the prevention of food waste on Section 1. Section 2 and 3 are, if the legislature is looking to move forward and providing additional resources to recycling and market development, we just have a few comments. And the first on Section 2 is, as additional dollars are going to counties, it's important that we also look at ways to ensure that there is additional results as a result of the new funding. One way, ways that this could be done would be through performance measures or other types of best management practices, so that counties that are getting the biggest bang for the buck and implementing those things would have a bigger share of it. And the third part, market development, we just want to talk a little bit about why it's important. And I have a few items for show and tell if that's helpful. I've got some garbage to pass around. I don't know if Paige wants to talk about this. But in this committee and other places, we have always talked about how single sorting and recycling has helped increase the amount of waste coming, recyclables coming into the system. And so what these bags are residue after it goes out through single sorting. What we haven't done is we haven't done single sorting right yet. We haven't optimized the systems. So these bags here are materials that are from Strategic Materials, a secondary processor for glass materials. And as you can see, there are a number of materials in there. Only about 65 to 70% of the glass that goes into the secondary processing is usable because of all these contaminants. About 10 to 13% of it is paper and plastic, which makes it hard for a hauler or recycling company to sell it to an end market. It's got to be cleaned up. And that's what this report is really about. It's about optimizing single sort, doing it right, and determining where are the kinks in the system that we need to work on for private and public investment to be able to move forward and make sure that when glass comes through, maybe it goes straight from a recycling company onto a tile maker because it's clean, or a into various other types of materials, new bottles or the like. And that's the importance of market development. It's usually, I know there's some thoughts always about the study and the need for another study. We believe the study is important because it really can target where we can get the biggest bang for the bucks when it's the limited amount of resources there. With that, thank you for the opportunity to comment on the bill, and if there's any questions.
Assistant Commissioner Kadelka, you really know how to bring nice gifts to the legislature. questions from the agency. Senator Scalzi.
Mr. Chair, I'm just remembering now there was one other little tiny change, which was a typographical error on the bill 2.31, line 231. The 50% should be 35. That was a typo in the original drafting of the bill.
So it's recycling goals in the metro area.
In the metro area, it's 75%, as it states in the line before. But in line 2.31, the 50% in greater Minnesota should be changed to be 35%. That was the bill that we passed last year.
Correct. That was the number we had last year, was 35% on 2.31?
Yes.
Senator Scalzi moves to amend page 2, line 31, delete 50, insert 35. Is there a discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Mr. Chair, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Matt Shear. I'm the legislative director for the Department of Administration, and I'm planning to speak today specifically to the A2 amendment, which references the Department of Administration on line 1.10. And I just wanted to make a few comments. First, let the committee know that the commissioner and the governor are very committed to the issue of recycling. And over the last probably month or so, we've been working cooperatively with the Pollution Control Agency to develop some things that you might have seen around the Capitol. And that was started through a meeting with Senator Marty and Representative McNamara. And so, Mr. Chair and members, you might have noticed around the building you'll see some different bins and signage that's going in. In the fall, we plan to online some composting. So there are certain steps that we're taking already in advance of the OLA report, and we are working on a continuous improvement project with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to look at some of those buildings that are outside of the Capitol complex. But I did want to speak briefly, in the past, we did have an approximate $400,000 line item for a resource recovery program, which was ended in 2001, and that was defunded, I believe, at the end of the last decade. It was something that was working on some metro-based buildings that are owned and operated by the state of Minnesota. We handled, I believe, the 23 in the immediate Capitol complex, which we still maintain custodial control, as well as approximately 10 buildings in the immediate surrounding area. From that perspective, at the moment, the Department of Administration only has direct custodial control over 23 of the Capitol complex buildings. And the bill as it's written, which we are happy to work with the author and the chair on to see if there's ways that the Department of Administration can help implement, seems to suggest that we'll be working on almost all buildings that any state agency or the legislature operates throughout the state of Minnesota, which presents a small challenge for the agency. We do write the leases for these buildings. However, oftentimes those are run by private entities. So hopefully we can work on that moving forward, Mr. Chair and Senator Scalzi.
And Mr. Scherr, I think, yeah, there's some language there, I mean, to make sure, like DNR park facilities and so on. Yes, you may not be the ones operating them and so on, but I think the intent is to make sure that, and if you see needs for change, please, yeah, work with the author, and I'm happy to help if possible. Make sure that you might be just sending directives to encourage them ways to make progress on this, because, again, the law has said for 20-some years that all state facilities are supposed to be doing this recycling, and I don't think there's any intent to have Department of Administration start administering those sites and so on, but just that you could encourage them and tell them here's some things they might be able to do to improve things. Is there questions for Mr. Scherr? Is there anybody else who wanted to speak to this amendment? Again, this would have, I think this would have been in the bill since Senator Scalzi's bill was dealing with the OLA report.
Right.
But
it's part of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Right. But because of the fact that it came from the counties, they didn't feel it was their role to tell the state what to do. So, if there's no further, Senator Scalzi moves the A2 amendment then. Is there any discussion of the amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. On the bill, we had one more. Alan Mueller, you wanted to testify. Is there anybody else in the room who had asked to testify that I don't have on my list? If not, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senators. My name is Alan Mueller, and over the past 7 or 8 years, I've had an opportunity to work, to assist as a consultant, a number of individuals and organizations in Minnesota that have been concerned to improve waste management in their communities and protect their communities from the harmful and undesirable approaches to waste management, such as incineration. So the perspective I bring to you, or that I try to bring to you on this bill, is that of a community perspective. And, you know, with all due respect to the legislative auditor, I find that perspective not to have been heard in this report. And let me give you an example. Over the last number of years, people in Minneapolis worked very hard in opposition to preventing the expanded burning of garbage at the Herc incinerator, and that was a successful effort, and that had a lot to do with the fact that Minneapolis is now making progress in improving its very low recycling rate and beginning to collect organics and so on. So at one time, some years ago, Minnesota was a national and perhaps something of a world leader in recycling, with a recycling rate close to 40%. And progress came to a stop, even perhaps dropped off a little bit. I think everyone agrees that recycling rates have been relatively stagnant in Minnesota for quite a while. Perhaps there's been a little blip up in the last couple of years. And it makes sense to ask why that is and what can be done about it. And one of those factors clearly was the unfortunate diversion of waste tax revenues into the general fund, which deprived the counties of resources that they needed. And so the part of the bill that seeks to move the pendulum the other way on that is much appreciated. The other factor that I want to talk about that might be a little bit less appreciated in some quarters is the role that the Pollution Control Agency has played or not played in advancing recycling. And it seems appropriate to note that the PCA has its finger in the pie on many levels and in many places. It's a policymaker. It is, for example, authorized to establish an enforceable metro solid waste plan without going through the usual Minnesota rulemaking procedure. It's a grant maker, a funder of significant amounts of money. It very commonly carries out environmental review of waste management facilities and also does permitting for dumps and incinerators, let's say. So if the PCA is not on track, it has a hugely detrimental effect. Now, I live in Goodhue County. In Goodhue County in recent months, the PCA has withheld the SCORE recycling funding from the county in an effort to force the county to enact a waste flow ordinance that would cause all the garbage in Goodhue County to go to an incinerator in the city of Red Wing, an incinerator that's a converted coal plant dating from the 1940s, whose permit has been expired since 2009. So, you know, I live in Red Wing. I don't want to breathe the additional incinerator emissions, and I imagine that other people don't. I don't imagine that people in Goodhue County want to pay the additional costs that would be associated with this proposal. And the last time I attended a Goodhue County board meeting a couple of months ago, a couple of the commissioners spoke in very loud voices to the effect that they felt that they were being subjected to blackmail and extortion. One of them said that the SCORE money is supposed to be for the operation of recycling programs, and that taking that money away was obviously not a way to increase recycling. Well, those commissioners are right. It is blackmail. It is extortion. And it's extraordinarily inappropriate from my point of view. Now, Minnesota has a waste hierarchy. You know, it begins with reduction and reuse, recycling, yard and food waste, composting, and then we get down to dumping and burning at the bottom of the hierarchy. Now, the PCA, regretfully, has for a long time been framing up waste management issues as dumping versus burning, and the PCA likes burning better than dumping. But since neither burning nor dumping are useful or acceptable approaches to waste management, when one frames up the issue as a competition between two bad alternatives at the bottom of the hierarchy, one doesn't get anywhere. And that's where we have been in Minnesota, is not getting very far. So what I would like to, I don't want to go on at great length here, but what I would like to propose to Senator Scalzi and the rest of you is that you add some wording to this bill that would say something like this. The MPCA and other state and local entities shall focus their efforts on the top three elements of the Minnesota waste management hierarchy. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory. We all pay lip service to recycling, but the people that I've been working with, my friends and clients, have been fighting the PCA's determined efforts to increase burning and disregard for recycling. So I think the intervention of the legislature here is very much needed to get the PCA back on track. And there's a lot more I could say, but I think I'll stop with that and be glad to try to answer any questions if there are any.
Questions from Mr. Mueller. Mr. Mueller, I'll say I do agree with you that focus ought to be on the top three steps of the hierarchy. And I would welcome hearing more at some point, not right now, but hearing more about the kind of thing what the Goodhue County Board is saying about that they're feeling they're not getting the SCORE money unless they do certain things. I don't know all the other issues they're dealing with in that situation, but I think the SCORE money is supposed to be to help move things higher up the hierarchy, and that's the intent of it. So be glad to, if you can send a note on that, and be happy to talk a little bit further about that. So. And maybe Senator Scalzi has anything, but I think it's worth looking into a little more. So.
And Mr. Chair, whenever you talk about solid waste and recycling, it brings up a lot of these issues, and that's a good issue, and I think we should look at that in the future. I've been contacted as well today related to textile, because the textile recycling, clothing and things like that could allow the counties to get their numbers up a little higher if they counted those. So there's a number of things that I think we should continue to work on, perhaps in a different bill. We're getting a little close to deadlines here. But I thank you for that information, and I think we have PCA people here that could maybe we could talk about that a little bit. But at this point, I would just like to I don't know if we voted on all of the amendments.
We voted on all. There's Senate Counsel points out that the A2 amendments on line 121, there's a typo. And so Senator Scalzi moves a technical amendment on A2 amendment line 1.21 on 21 to just delete the word recycling and insert recycle. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is now with those three amendments on it. Did you have any further things to add?
Actually, no. We've had a lot of good testimony on this bill. I would just like to thank the PCA and the counties, especially the Solid Waste Management Control Coordinating Board, and also the solid waste business leaders for their assistance in getting the bill to this point. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Scalzi moves the Senate File 1132 as amended, be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Finance, I believe. Yes. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We will take up the Senate File 1432.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Senate File 1432, Public Entity Purchasing Requirements, Recycling of Solid Waste, Subsurface Sewage Treatment Systems, Compensable Losses Due to Harmful Substances, and Grant Eligibility Modifications. Senator Marty and Assistant Commissioner Kodelka, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that long title, I didn't know that was all in the title. That long bill is, I think you might call this a PCA policy bill. I don't know that it's, I think a lot of them are technical changes, but I better not say that because I'm not sure. I know a lot of them may not be. But I have Mr. Kodelka here who is going to go through the bill, and I believe we have an A1 amendment in the packets that needs a little technical change to it. So I'll look that over while he goes through the bill, and then we can present that.
So, Senator Marty, I read that out just to give you enough time to get down to Iowa so you could, like,
very
you
generous
know, present. So that was good. So, Assistant Commissioner, welcome back.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kodelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And as the author mentioned, this is our small policy technical change bill. There's a handout in your packet that will probably be easiest just to go through. It's a one-pager dealing with the overall concepts in the policy bill as they go through the order of the bill itself. The first section deals with increasing the recycled content of copy paper. Right now, the state law has it at 10% for copy paper, and we're proposing moving that to 30% for purchase of copy paper by public entities. This is to help match the federal and industry standard of 30% that's used currently, and it's to help, also to ensure local markets for recycled materials. We just talked about finding market development, and in Minnesota we do have a lot of paper going towards one plant in Minnesota to help with recycled content. The next change is Section 2, 3, and 7, and this deals with simplifying for septic professionals building sewer regulations. A building sewer is the pipe between a house and a septic system. There's a small pipe in between there, and that's underneath the plumbing code. As a result, septic professionals, as they are installing systems, they need to have an approval with the Department of Labor and Industry on it, in addition to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. What we're proposing here is to make it code definition, so that pipe is under the septic and plumbing code. The end result for the septic professionals is that they would only need to come to the MPCA to get the septic certification that they need and the bond, instead of also going to the Department of Labor and Industry and getting a bond and also getting the pipe layer card. This is going to be a streamlining that we've been working on with the Department of Labor and Industry, the pipe fitters, the mechanical contractors, and the septic professionals for over a year or so. This will help streamline the process. The next item on the fact sheet is updating recycling definitions. It's actually something that we were looking to make as a technical change, but is removed in the A1 amendment, so I'll skip that. The next piece deals with reporting of mixed municipal solid waste and recycling materials. A number of years ago, the legislature worked with the counties to streamline reporting for SCORE. Part of that process was to look at getting information directly from waste haulers and facilities instead of having that information reported to the counties and then back to the state. What we've been doing in the meantime and working with all the stakeholders to get the language that you see in the bill in sections 9 and 10, part of that is being replaced in the amendment so that we can work on creating two forms, a long and short form, that help reduce the amount of reporting done to government units by waste haulers and counties. The next item is Section 12, dealing with vapor mitigation systems and the harmful substance compensation program. Currently, the state has a program so that when we have a situation where a drinking water treatment system needs to be installed, if there is not a responsible party, it is the duty of the state to take care of the cost for installing that. On larger situations, we'll put together a contract and have a contractor go out and do a number of homes at one time. What this allows for is for a homeowner to do that work on their own. In the case where potentially they may be one or two houses in the area, and it relieves the need for a state contract and the bids to go out and streamlines the process. As a result, what happens then is the homeowner submits their invoices to the state with a limit of up to $25,000. We go through and look at the costs to make sure they match what we would pay on the statewide contract, and this allows for us to get the work done in a very quick way and allow for the homeowners to move forward and provide for protection of their home. What we're asking to do is add vapor mitigation systems to this system since we are seeing more and more issues of soil vapors and the need to potentially install them in homes long-term or short-term. And then this would allow for a homeowner to take the effort themselves, submit the invoices to the state. We'd make sure that they meet the criteria needed in state law, and then we would reimburse them. It's no additional cost to the state. One way or the other, the state, when there's not a viable, responsible party, has to pick up these costs. What we're just doing is allowing for another way for the homeowner to take care of it instead of having the state do it. The last sections are 13 through 15, and this deals with the Point Source Implementation Grant. This is a grant that's funded currently through the Clean Water Fund and used for storm and wastewater improvements local units of government may install. The grant is for local units of government that are eligible. If the state puts together a watershed restoration and protection strategy, or TMDL, which are studies that state additional things may need to be done to protect and restore a waterway. If a facility needs to make changes, they are eligible for up to 50% of their costs in a grant, up to a $3 million cap. What we've run into a situation in Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water and the city of Morris is that they have drinking water treatment systems that once they clean the water, the discards that are going out through the wastewater treatment are not meeting standards or having difficulties. One way to fix it is to improve the back end, the wastewater system, and then be eligible for the grant. However, in both of these cases, it appears it may make more sense to just change the treatment system that's creating those discards. However, that improvement is not allowed under this funding. What we'd like to do is allow for those situations where there's only a couple that we know of to use improvements to the drinking water treatment system to reduce the waste that goes into state water to be eligible for the project too. This will help the local unit of government find a more innovative way to take care of the problem and provide more resources to them. And Mr. Chair, that's a summary of the bill. If there's any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, before we take questions, I'd like to move the A1 author's amendment with one oral change. I will say on line 9, we would strike everything after recyclable materials and insert two governmental units. That's the A1 amendment to the bill, line 9. Delete the when reporting to the agency under paragraph D and change that to two governmental units. And I'll incorporate that in the amendment and offer the A1 with that change in it. Do people have that?
Does everybody have the A1 amendment?
And that puts the bill in the shape that Mr. Assistant Commissioner Kadelka explained it in taking out all those sections related to the definition of reuse and sections 4 through 8.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There were some changes in those definitions. Have those changes been implemented somewhere else?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, in 2014, the definition was changed. In one spot recycling, the reuse was taken out of it. And so that will still be in law, but it only pertains, when we read it closely, it only pertains, it says this section. So it is a different definition there. We are going to continue to look over this issue in the interim when we have our legislative solid waste policy report. We just, some folks raised up some unintended consequences, and we just want to make sure we do it right. So we'll spend the interim to look it over.
Senator Weber.
Thank you. I guess the issue that caught my attention was on page 617, striking that recycling means process, collect, and prepare and recycle materials and reusing the materials in their original form. I mean, to me, it seems like recycling includes utilizing that to me sounds reasonable, and I'm just wondering why that would be stricken in that.
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, when we think of reuse and reusing things in their original form, it's someone putting a couch out and they reuse the couch as is, or a sweater, okay. Versus in this case, while it still may be recycling, the more traditionally we think of is aluminum from a can. It may still be aluminum, but it's manipulated, melted, and then reformed into another can. That's the distinction of the difference we're trying to make.
Senator Marty.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, because our waste hierarchy has reuse and recycle. They were changing it to conform with something. They weren't sure that they were doing it the right way. So I think it's better to hold off until they've got it straight.
So having said that, Senator Weber, any follow-ups or we're good? A1 amendment, author's amendment, all those in favor say aye.
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 We're good. Senator Marty moved it. Do I have to redo that?
You just
need
the motion.
Senator Marty moves the A1 amendment.
I did move the A1 amendment.
Thank you very much. What
with,
I thought. I got
with that language incorporated, yeah.
You know, I think it must have been the discussion of the couch, and it takes us back to our college years about reusing the couch and the, you know.
Good to reuse couch.
Thank you, Senator Marty.
So, Mr. Chair, I don't have any other witnesses on the bill. You might ask if anybody wanted to speak with concerns about it. I'm happy to take questions. We're happy to take questions.
Senator Marty, is anybody out there that want to talk? Seeing none, the Senate file 1432, Senator Marty moves as amended, and where's it going to? State and local. Senator Marty moves as amended, Senate file 1432 go to state and local. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Congratulations, Senator Marty. Senate file 1414.
Is Mr. Knopf, are we ready with language in a way that people can understand what we're together?
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, I will try to make sure that people can understand it. I'll do my best. Mr. Chair, I think, does everybody have the A4 amendment, which is a delete all amendment?
Mr. Knopf, hold on.
Yeah, let's make sure we
have. Yes, Senator Weber. Yep. We're good.
Hang on, wait a second at this end.
But the author doesn't have it.
Here, I think it's A4. Yes, I got it. Go ahead.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, this will have to be done as an oral amendment. I'll read it carefully, and if you have any questions, let me know. But Senator Marty, as announced earlier, wanted to keep some of the DNR certification language that was in the original bill. It did not show up in the delete all amendment. So to start, it'd be on page 3, line 26. This is the A4 amendment. Page 3, line 26 of the A4 amendment, before the period, insert, and this is going to be long, and I apologize, we're going to be putting in a new clause. But it's before the period, insert semicolon and then we'll then have a new clause number 7, which states the claimant has registered the forest management plan under clause 2 with the Commissioner of Natural Resources, who has concurred that the land is qualified. This has to do with the eligibility requirements. So the Commissioner of Natural Resources has to concur that it's qualified. This is from the original. It's a slightly modified version because the original bill was transferring this down to the Commissioner of Natural Resources, and this is the only way we can do this at this point.
And that's, Mr. Chair.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf, that's in the original bill. That's roughly the language on page 4, lines 17 and 18?
Yes.
Okay.
It's slightly modified, but basically the language. And then on line 3.33, after line 3.33, going to insert a new paragraph that says the Commissioner of Natural Resources shall annually provide county assessors verification information regarding plan registration under paragraph A Clause 7 on a timely basis. Now, that's the same language, again, as Senator Marty just pointed out. If you look at the original bill, you'll see on page 4, lines 4.26 to 4.27. So we're inserting that language in this bill also in that location. And so, except it had to be modified because we have to say that we have to specify the Commissioner of Natural Resources because under the current law for the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act, it's the Commissioner of the Commissioner meets Commissioner of Revenue. So this is the Commissioner of Natural Resources that does these activities. So we're inserting that back in. And then if you go to the original bill on page 5, section 9 is not currently in the draft. So we need to add in that amendment to 290C.08 with some modifications because now the under the original bill the payment was retained at $7 an acre and now we've got a more complex payment, so we need to have the Commissioner of Natural Resources basically just certifying who's eligible. So we're going to insert section 9 from the original bill with the following changes.
So the language on page 5,
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, page 5, line 13 to 28, we're working, you're going to give
that
us
will
the
be an
changes
amendment.
To
will
that
be, will be added to the delete everything amendment enough. With the following changes. And Mr. Chair, on 5.17 of that section, you need to add after Commissioner of Natural Resources. And then on 5.18, delete of revenue since we don't need to spell that out. And also delete annual incentive payment VAT and insert eligibility of. And then delete is entitled and after receive insert a payment. And then on 5.19 and 5.26, delete of revenue. So the issue here is that, let me just read how it's going to read when we're done.
Please.
By September 1 of each year, the Commissioner of Natural Resources will certify to the Commissioner the eligibility of each claimant to receive a payment. And then the incentive payment shall be paid by the Commissioner, which is defined as Commissioner of Revenue in this chapter, on October 1. And then on the appropriation, the amount necessary to make is appropriated to the Commissioner from the general fund. So you stay with current language on that. We're deleting the new language on 5.26. Oh, and then on 5.28, to be consistent with the remaining parts of the amendment, you need to delete 2015 and insert 2016. That would be consistent with the remaining provisions in the bill. And so that would add that back in. The original bill had the Commissioner of Natural Resources determining the payment because that was $7 times whatever acres. But I think under the current plan, with it staying in the Department of Revenue and a more complex payment based on the tax rate, all you want to do is make sure that the Commissioner of Natural Resources certifies that those plans have been submitted and that the Commissioner of Natural Resources has done that. So that's the basic parts of the amendment, Mr. Chair. That would be added
Mr.
to the
Chair,
delete everything.
Senator Marty.
Because this is very confusing, I'll just explain it and see if I got it right and make sure if others have questions. Basically, we're taking the A4 amendment, but we're making the changes on line 3.26, where we'd insert language from the original bill from page 4.17 and 1.8. And after line 3.33 of the A4 delete everything amendment, we'd be inserting the language from the old bill of page 4, lines 26 and 27. And then we would be inserting section 9 from the original bill with that new text that that Mr. Knopp read in here. And that's what I would like to move in. I apologize for that because I guess it was partly my mistake. Some of this, I know Senator Scoy was heavily working on some of that because tax provisions and so on. You know, Senator Saxog is here as well, and I will invite him up in a minute. But this is trying to, I will explain that. This is the author's amendment the way I'd like the bill to be in, so maybe if we could consider that, and then we can go speak to the whole point of the bill, if that works.
So, Senator Marty, it sounds like you want to incorporate this language into your A4 amendment, correct?
Yes, so those changes that Mr. Knopf just explained and I tried to restate, do people understand what we trying to do there, because the original bill as introduced, was trying to address a lot of the concerns the legislative auditor had suggested. And Senator Scoy had some provisions that I think were very helpful, which I'll explain why the whole point of the bill. But in doing so, we accidentally took out some of the provisions that the legislative auditor had recommended, so we're trying to reinstate them. And the way this delete everything would be, it would still be all in the Department of Revenue's charge because it's a tax-related provisions, but the legislative auditor was saying, well, let's make sure people are doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is DNR turf, and therefore we're trying to urge the two, and I apologize for that was just pointed out to me shortly before this.
So, Member Senator Marty, incorporating the changes into the A4 amendment, are there any questions for Senator Marty? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Senator Marty, the bill is now in your, how you like it.
Now, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I wanted to speak briefly to the bill and have some of my witnesses come up here with it. This bill is to amend the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act, which has provided a payment to forest owners who have a forest management plan. There have been several problems with the way we've dealt with the forest land in the past. We've had big change in the state a number of years ago because of a change in tax policy where some of the huge landowners in the state, some of the paper companies that manage large chunks of our state forests, all of a sudden found it that it was getting very costly for them to maintain that land. So a number of them started parceling out, selling off big chunks of their forest land. And that is not necessarily a provision I think we would like to see happen. And I think a lot of the paper companies and the other environmental groups and everyone liked what the Sustainable Forest Act was supposed to do, but some people were getting more money from the fund than they were getting in property taxes. A lot of them were finding things going the wrong direction and they were parceling out their land. And so the legislative auditor did a report a year plus ago and made several recommendations. I think this may be in the packets. Key recommendations that the legislature should tie the incentive payments more directly to the Sustainable Forest Incentive Program's goals or repeal it and use other programs. This would be tying it more directly, that the legislature should require program applicants to register their plans with the DNR. That's what this bill will now do. Yes, it is in your packets. It should require increased verification of program compliance. It should clarify and expand penalty options for noncompliance and should amend SFIA to better address land changes in ownership of enrolled lands. And as I think I said earlier, both Senator Scoy and Senator Saxog have worked heavily on this. I think this is one that the entire state benefits from. This will be, for some people, more funding going to some of those landowners to do what it's basically trying to get back to some of what we had in the past, where we had a fair process for making sure that those who are going to sustain the forestry the way it is are going to be able to do so without having to sell off their lands because of the costs. And the language here, and this is Senator Scoy's suggestion, was you can see at the top of page, bottom of page four, or in top of page five, that we're trying to get people to keep this land in forestry for a long time. And Senator Scoy's idea was let's try 8 years, a standard provision, but we would give people a higher payment if they do it for 20 years or higher yet if they do it for 50 years. And I think he came up with a very innovative way of doing that. And from what I understand, Senator Saxog and some of the folks who represent those areas feel that it's done fairly, and this won't be having people, occasional stories of people who were perhaps overcompensated by it. I think this is a fairer system of compensation, and as the auditor recommended, making sure they're doing what they have, having the forest management plans in place. With that, I'd love to have some of the people who are coming to speak to the bill, and I'm looking for my list of witnesses, but you want to call them in the order.
Sure.
On the
Senator Marty, I see there are four witnesses, Bruce Zumbalin, Dave Zumeta, Forrest Bow, and Wayne Brandt, in that order. So
that's a fine order.
That's a fine order. There we go. Well, did I say your name right, Mr. Zambala? Ballin?
Mr. Chairman, yes, you did. I am Bruce Zambalin, for the record, with the Minnesota Forestry Association, the oldest conservation organization in the state. Was created to promote stewardship of Minnesota's forests back in 1876. Over time, our mission has evolved to focus on management of family-owned woodlands, which are often the most threatened by development or partitioning due to financial pressures and where many landowners lack knowledge of forest management. Today, our mission is to encourage the retention and sustainable management of family-owned woodlands. And the Sustainable Forest Incentives Act, or the SFIA, as we call it, is very important in supporting that goal. I speak on behalf of the nearly 2,300 small woodland owners who have enrolled in the program, recording a covenant intended to protect the land and having a management plan to follow in implementing practices. Many landowners have told me that without the SFIA, they couldn't have afforded to make improvements to maintain the woodlands and would likely have sold their woodlands. But Senator Marty has already mentioned the SFI has some problems, many from unforeseen circumstances not envisioned at the time of its enactment back in 2001, particularly the sale of some of the larger ownerships. So some of these things that the legislative auditor's report addressed is not a real surprise to us. In fact, the Minnesota Forestry Association backed a bill, Senate File 842, in the 2011 session that would have addressed many of the legislative auditor's concerns. So we're very supportive of the legislative auditor's key recommendations and some of the suggestions to bring back some of the benefits that Senator Marty has mentioned. We did work with part of the work group that was organized by the Department of Natural Resources, Department of Revenue, and the Minnesota Forest Resources Council, and we're happy to see that many of the recommendations of that work group were reflected in the original bill. I came prepared to speak to the original bill, but with so many changes in the Delete All Amendment and things like that, I just want to point out that one of the key provisions that we think needs to be addressed is the new disclosure requirements, because in many instances where we had issues with folks who developed their property after they bought it, they weren't even aware of those provisions. Yeah. We want to point out the stiffened penalties that would deter them from developing those properties. They should recognize that the program is to be an incentive program for management and not just a way to buy land to develop it. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to answer any questions that the committee has.
Thank you, Mr. Zambalin. Is any questions for our testifier? And Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I think, and just want to clarify, I think what he was saying about the provision about notifying new owners. I mean, the trouble is now some people are buying land and not realizing it was in the program, and this legislation, which was again one of their recommendations, one of the auditor's ones, is that people, when there's a land transfer, people know what they're getting into.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Zambalin, any further comments? Or
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Zambalin. Next is Dave Zemeta and Forrest Bowe. You're on deck there, Mr. Bowe and Mr. Zemeta. Come on up. Welcome, Mr. Zemeta, the Executive Director of Minnesota Forest Resources Council.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Dave Zemeta. Minnesota Forest Resources Council is a state council charged with advising the governor, the legislature, on sustainable forest policies and practices. Back in December of 2013, the commissioners of DNR and Revenue and I received a letter from Senator Saxog and Representative Dill asking that our departments discuss the recommendations that were outlined in the 2013 Legislative Auditor's Evaluation Report on the Sustainable Forest Incentive Program. For most of 2014, we engaged a diverse group of stakeholders to discuss the report and other program issues. The group included representatives from Minnesota Forest Industries, the Minnesota Forestry Association, you just heard from, the Aitkin County Assessor's Office, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, Nature Conservancy, my council, the University of Minnesota, the Department of Natural Resources, and the Department of Revenue. This January, I sent a letter to Senator Saxhog and Representative Dill, along with a copy of the findings and recommendations of the stakeholder group. There was broad agreement on most of the recommendations, which were very much in line with the auditor's recommendations. Departments of Revenue and Natural Resources participated in the meetings and provided background information, but didn't take a position on the recommendations of the stakeholder group. Thanks to much hard work on the part of the folks from MFA, Minnesota Forest Industries, and a number of others, Senate File 1414, as amended today, addresses most of the recommendations from both the auditor's report and the stakeholder group. Minnesota Forest Resources Council has 17 very diverse members. It's taking a formal vote on this bill in whatever amended form it is at the time of the council's next meeting on March 18th in Forest Lake. I anticipate that most of my council's 17 members are likely to be supportive of the bill as amended today. Two of my members, Mr. Forrest Bowe from Department of Natural Resources, Mr. Wayne Brandt from Minnesota Forest Industries, Minnesota Timber Producers Association, are going to speak immediately after me. They'll speak for themselves and their own organizations. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Zumata. Any questions for our testifier? If not, Senator Marty, want to bring out Mr. Bowe and
Mr.
Brandt? Senator Marty.
Come up. Just reminded, we have an A6 amendment, and rather than have all the testimony and then find out there was a concern with it, I'd like to put it out there on the table as well. That was an A6 amendment, and I think it came from, I'm not sure whether DNR or Park and Trails folks or whom, but it was amendment A6 to the bill. So I'd like to put that out there and just explain that that would allow withdrawal from the SFIA program. The operative language, is this in the packets?
Yes, Senator Marty, members, you should have the A6 amendment in your package.
Language is at the bottom of it on line 29 and following. Notwithstanding the other procedures for withdrawal, the commissioner should allow early withdrawal from SFIA without penalty when the state is getting a permanent conservation easement on the property. And the easement is at least as restrictive as the covenant required under that section. In the case of an eligible easement acquisition, commissioner shall execute and acknowledge a document releasing the land, et cetera. And this is, and notwithstanding, they shall allow early withdrawal without penalty for land that's subject to the easement or lease of the state for a political subdivision for a public purpose of a paved trail. In the case of an eligible fee or easement acquisition, the commissioner shall execute and acknowledge. In other words, we're removing, allowing those two reasons for withdrawing from the thing. And my understanding is that that's what folks involved were seeking. But that's why I wanted to present that right now before Mr. Zumata leaves and others.
Any questions for Senator Marty on the A6 amendment?
Well, we have them speak to it quickly.
Mr. Chair, members, Senator Marty, I testified in support of this previously. I'm very much in support of that. And that's Senator Saxhog and I, yeah.
Thank you, Mr.
I forgot where it came from.
Thank you, Mr. Zumata. So, Senator Marty, let's just clarify. Do you want to move that A6 amendment now?
I'd like to move it then, unless there's anybody who needs to testify against it. Okay.
Any questions for Senator Marty? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A6 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign, none. Thank you, Senator Marty. Senator Marty, you have with you Forrest Bowe and Wayne Brandt. Welcome, Mr. Bowe.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Forrest Bowe. I'm the Director of Forestry with the Department of Natural Resources. As Senator Marty pointed out, the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act keeps forests as forests. It maintains private forests and slows forest fragmentation. It protects clean water by having more forested land on the landscape. That provides wildlife habitat, recreation opportunities, and forest products. And it encourages private forest landowners to manage their lands sustainably now and into the future. It also reduces incentives for land development and supports forest jobs in many of our northern communities. The Department of Natural Resources Division of Forestry supports reclarifying the goals of SFIA and appreciates all the work that members and our author has done on the bill. We clearly like linking the payments to those goals and encourages private landowners to manage their lands long-term and in a sustainable fashion. We do understand that some of these duties have been transferred to the department now in the amendments today, and some level of stable and secure funding would be needed and necessary to perform those duties, but at this point I haven't had the opportunity to figure out what we would need for that.
Thank you, Mr. Bowe. Any questions for our testifier? Senator Marty? Thank you, Senator Marty. Welcome, Wayne Brandt, to the committee. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Always a pleasure to be here. Wayne Brandt, Minnesota Forest Industries. Our members are primary manufacturers of forest products, forest landowners, utility poles, renewable bioenergy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I won't belabor the substance of the bill. I just want to thank Senator Marty and Senator Skoy, who have been working diligently on this. You know, there's a long history in our state of trying through the tax system to maintain forestry within our state. It's even mentioned in our Constitution, so it goes back to statehood. You know, we think that admirable work has been done here by Senator Marty, Senator Skoy, Senator Saxog, and others are appreciative of dealing with the issues raised by the legislative auditor and in dealing with the financial part of the bill. As I indicated to Senator Marty and to Senator Skoy, you know, we're still interested in understanding better some of the formulas. The original SFIA had a formula in it. We think that's a good direction potentially, and as it moves into the tax committee on the funding side, we'll, you know, understand that further. But we do support the direction this bill is going, again, and thank the authors and the committee for hearing us.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. Any questions for Mr. Brandt? Seeing none, Senator Martin, I think there's a couple other people that
yes,
want to come up.
I see Mr. Zirkbenek would like to speak to it, and I don't know.
Is there anybody else that would like to speak on behalf? Mr. Zirkbenek, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's an honor to be before you in the committee. My name is Gary Zirkbenek, and I represent the Mesaba Trail. And on the A6 amendment, I just have a suggestion, if the committee would and Senator Marty would consider it, to make the effective date immediately after final enactment rather than 2016, because the amendment addresses putting a paved trail, which is our Mesaba Trail, on Sustainable Forestry Incentive Act land, and we need it effective for this summer.
Senator Marty, Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, I think it's a little more complicated than that, because the remaining sections in this bill with this new system all have the date of 2016. So I think we're going to have to split the effective date a little bit. What my suggestion is that on 2.7 before this, insert paragraphs C and D are effective the day following final enactment, period. And then after the period, insert the remainder of. So paragraphs C and D are effective the day following final enactment. The remainder of this section is effective for notifications, because that has to do with the 50-year, and it kind of ties in with some of the other parts in the bill. And I was thinking that we could split that way, and that way it shouldn't cause a problem then.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that change.
Thank you. Senator Marty moves that change as read. And everybody who agrees with that, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if anybody else needs to testify to the bill. I will say that, again, this is I think there's good support around the state for trying to sustain our forests. I remember after the DNR is deciding to do a EAW related to the water drawdown in some of the lands that are being deforested up in central Minnesota, legitimate concerns about what's going on. I was talking with him after that, and we both agreed, you know, if this land remains in forestry, we don't have those problems, because this is land that has been forested land over the years. And I think this is in the whole state's long-term best interest economically and environmentally and everything else. And as the witnesses all point out, both Senator Saxog and Senator Skoy have been heavily involved in this, and I know Representative Dill in the House is, I think he's the author of the bill there. And I think it's a good package. It's making sure we get what we're investing in with sustainable forests, and the whole sustainable forest idea is a very good concept. So I'd urge support. And this bill, it does go to finance and to taxes. It normally would go to finance first, but because so much of this is tax provision, I think the suggestion was we refer it to taxes first, even though that's not the normal route. So I'll move that this bill be recommended, as amended, be recommended pass and referred to committee on taxes.
Senator Marty moves Senate File 1414 be moved, passed, recommended for passed with amendments, and sent on to taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Senator Marty. Next up, Senator Marty, is Senate File 1515.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This next bill didn't start out with everybody on the same side of the table as much. The wetlands, every time we touch wetlands, it becomes a big, difficult issue. And taking a look at the Wetlands Conservation Act again, this is another one that I think Senator Skoy had encouraged people look at. He met with our committee, and we agreed that it was something that they ought to pull together folks on all sides and get them together to talk with each other and work something out. After many, many months, I think a month ago, this bill is a higher Senate file number because they weren't together yet. And there are still, I think what you'd find is that a lot of people think this is a step forward, as do I. A lot of people aren't happy with every provision. I don't know anybody who's happy with every provision in the bill. But this is an attempt to move forward our Wetlands Conservation Act. And we're trying to do three key things. One is to make sure that most wetland mitigation is occurring in the watershed where it's happening. We're trying to do it more where we're taking away from wetland, trying to replace it there. Trying to improve the targeting of wetland mitigation when we're doing it somewhere else. Make sure we have high priority areas. It's not going to be right there. Let's try and do it other parts of the state where we can get the best bang for the buck. And we are also going to try and get more diverse types of mitigation mechanisms. We'd allow somebody who's going to need to replace a wetland to give them a chance to pay for it so they could have some conservation group, Nature Conservancy, Ducks Unlimited, whoever, who would be running a program that would do mitigation instead of that. And we think this is a good approach to it. We have a lot of people wishing to testify on it, and I know a lot of them are coming to express concerns, but I think the first couple are going to be speaking to how they came together on this. And I believe it's a good package, and I recognize nobody is going to find it wonderful in every way, but I think it's a good step forward. So I'll be happy to take questions, but I think it'd be best if we can have the three speak to how it came together first.
Any questions for Senator Marty? Seeing none, I would want to bring up Dave Wierens, Brian Napstad, and Jill Bathke, and if I butchered anybody's last name, forgive me on that. And Senator Marty, it looks like you have about 9 people testifying that have signed up. I don't know if there's any more, but that'll put us to about 8 o'clock this evening. So we probably want to be cautious of the time on this.
Mr. Chair, we'll take speed talking lessons.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Dave Wierens from the Minnesota Board of Soil and Water Resources, welcome.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is David Wierens, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I certainly will try and keep my comments limited, especially in light of Senator Marty's overview of the bill and the positive move forward that we believe this bill provides for us. But I think there are a couple of things for the committee to be aware of in considering this legislation today. You know, because I think really the basis and the genesis for moving forward and having this bill here before you this evening. Were several information hearings held both in the House and the Senate last session where the interest on the part of senators and representatives made very clear in the interest of dealing with issues, particularly as it relates to wetland mitigation affecting northeast Minnesota. And really the foundation of our work is a report that was completed by an interagency team of our staff experts from both the Board of Water and Soil Resources, Department of Natural Resources, Pollution Control Agency, as well as the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, all key agencies involved with wetland regulation in the state of Minnesota. And I think before you, as you look at the language, I think the problem statement that group came up with as part of this report, I think is important as it spells out what the issues are and why we need to look at different options and more flexibility for wetland mitigation in Minnesota. And I'm just going to read this to you. It's fairly brief. Ongoing and projected impacts to wetlands in northeast Minnesota are creating high demand for compensatory wetland mitigation. Due to the high prevalence of wetlands and the relative lack of drained wetlands in northeast Minnesota, opportunities to meet the demand through traditional mitigation approaches are limited. Improved coordination of federal and state wetland regulatory programs can more effectively address these unique circumstances. So the very point being is that there's a lot of wetlands, meaning that most activities that affect land in north Minnesota are going to affect the wetland. The fact there's been very little draining, the traditional mitigation opportunities we look for are restoring a previously drained wetland. There just are very few of those in northeast Minnesota. So we need to look at alternative options and flexibility to address those issues. And Senate File 1515 really moves us forward in providing new opportunities to, as Senator Martin indicated, improve the targeting, as well as improve the quality and sustainability of wetlands that are restored under the Conservation Act. I'll spend just a minute on the process we use, because we did get started working on this last July by having a number of meetings with stakeholders. We engaged well over 100 different individuals across 40 to 50 different organizations that are interested in wetland policy in the state of Minnesota. And we had a series of meetings that ran through the month of December where we engaged folks to really have it be a two-way conversation to go over the issues that as we saw them and the agencies with our responsibilities, but also hear what their concerns are of how we actually move wetland policy forward. The key goals, again, of course, are to keep mitigation within the watershed of impact to the extent we can, but also to improve coordination with our federal partners is a very important issue. Certainly you've heard from some of your constituents who have concerns about the regulatory processes and how they overlap. So in light of that particular process, the legislation that provides for, I think, a few key issues that are important to take note of. The in-lieu fee program is a important new way of providing flexibility for wetland mitigation. The way the program operates is individuals would pay a fee, hence the name in-lieu fee, that would then go to the board, the way the bill is drafted, and then it would be our responsibility to provide the mitigation in a similar fashion we do for local road projects currently under state law. The improved targeting through high-priority areas is a really important issue. Right now, there's very little when it comes to restoring wetlands for wetland mitigation across the state. There really is very little direction to individuals. They find a piece of property and they restore and they get wetland credit for it, regardless of if it's in a good location to provide watershed needs. We think we can do a better job of trying to direct replacement wetlands to not only provide the regulatory mitigation that's required, but also provide watershed benefits at the same time. A third goal we have is we think it's very important for wetland mitigation to be locally accepted. We want the local governments to accept those mitigation sites, be consistent with their plans, and there are requirements throughout this through stakeholder coordination, through designation of high priority areas, to make sure that we engage local governments so they're part of the process of moving the wetland program forward. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Wirens. Any questions for our testifier? Seeing none, Senator Marty, we have Brian Napstad from Aiken County. Mr. Napstad, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Brian Napstad. I'm an Aiken County commissioner. And under full disclosure, I'm also the chairman of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I speak today as an Aiken County commissioner and a member of the Association of Minnesota Counties. The Association of Minnesota Counties was one of the stakeholders that was involved in the process that was just described by Assistant Director Wirens. It was a very good process, open process, seemed like a long process, but it was a good process. AMC has long been dealing with wetland-related issues. It's long been an area of frustration in the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee of the Association of Minnesota Counties. The frustration that we've been witnessing is impacts in northeast Minnesota that through proper sequencing have been identified as candidates to leave the area have seen the wetland restorations going in areas that really don't need the wetland restorations and really do not recognize a great deal of public value of those restorations. In fact, the legislative platform drawn up by AMC was to support any legislative efforts that would improve wetland management and ensure the maximum public value for wetland mitigation projects. Our involvement in this process and our support for it is three of the key areas that were just discussed. Number one, the bill does provide for other actions other than a wetland mitigation. So when you're in northeast Minnesota and you've gone through the proper sequencing, you find that there are no opportunities to do a wetland restoration and you're going to leave the area. Well, prior to leaving the area, you do, through this bill, have an opportunity to do other activities that would provide wetland benefits. I think that's a big deal for the northeast counties as well as the project proposers, in that you can do other clean water type activities to gain credits for any impacts that occur. Secondly, the identification of the priority areas. A number of county commissioners look at these wetland restorations going in, for example, my county, Aiken County. Just briefly, we're from Farmington to North Branch. We're from the St. Croix to Minnetonka in size. We cover essentially this entire seven-county metro area, 1.167 million acres. According to the National Wetland Inventory, we have 573,000 acres of wetlands in our 1.1 million acre county. We don't believe that. Our ground truthing through our own environmental services departments indicates we have closer to 726,000 acres of wetlands in Aiken County. Whether it's 50% or 60% or 70%, approximately every other footstep you're in a wetland. Is this the place we want to be restoring wetlands? It doesn't seem we're getting the public value. So this identification of the priority areas is of great benefit to the citizens and the state by maximizing the public value of wetland mitigations. And finally, similarly, the in-lieu fee payment program does the same thing, except rather than a project proposer going to a priority area, Bowser or that third-party entity would be able to perform the same function. So AMC is very pleased that Senator Marty and the co-authors have come up with this bill this year, and we support it strongly. I would answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Napstad. Any questions for our testifier? Seeing none, Jill Bathke from Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. Welcome, Ms. Bathke. Did I say that name right?
You did.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Jill Bathke, Environmental Resource Scientist with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. MCA has a long history of working on wetland issues, and I will be brief today, but our position is outlined in the wetland handout that looks like this. If you don't have it, I'm sure the page can hand it out. MCA supports this bill because it makes modest improvements for wetland mitigation for northeastern Minnesota. We agree with many points that will be made by our colleagues that will be testifying with you today, and we look forward to working on those issues in the future. Mr. Warrens mentioned a large group stakeholder process that convened earlier this year, and we attended all those stakeholder meetings. We also participated in a smaller drafting group on the details of the bill. We believe the positive environmental impacts improvements in the bill are improved watershed-based wetland replacement and management of wetland replacement through an in-lieu fee program, enhanced wetland functional replacement in northeastern Minnesota through alternative mitigation options in the bill, such as stream restoration and wetland preservation, and fewer bad mitigation projects due to the work of an interagency rapid response team created in the bill. Without a doubt, there must be further work on WACA to continue to find ways to better avoid wetland impacts and replace them within the watershed. However, MCA supports this bill and views it as a small step away from poorly designed, managed, and sited mitigation projects that exist today and a potential step towards improved wetland mitigation for northeastern Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts, and I welcome any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Bathke. Any questions for our testifier? Seeing none, Senator Marty, it looks like Don Arnosti and Paula McAbee would be next.
And, Mr. Chair, I think a lot of the testimony, I don't want to predict what everybody's going to say, but I think a lot of them are things they wish were in the bill, additional things, and I'd like to see some more things too. But I think what we're trying to do is come up with package, and they've spent many months trying to come up with something. I think it's a step forward, and some may have concerns about things they feel are harmful in the bill. I think some would like to have more things in the bill as well.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Mr. Arnasty from the Isaac Walton League, welcome.
We'll get these handed out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in this bill. The Isaac Walton League is a 90-year-old conservation organization with 17 chapters around the state. We've been involved in wetland protection since the foundation of our organization and have been heavily involved in the stakeholder process, both in this particular round leading to this particular bill and many others through the years. The Minnesota Division of the Isaac Walton League took a careful look at this bill, and our executive committee came to the resolution, which is being distributed to you now. Basically, we are concerned about several of the things that Senator Marty kind of alluded to that are missing from this bill and cannot support this legislation without the reintroduction of these ideas that were in the bill until the final drafting. These elements, much of the reason why we're debating and discussing the Wetland Conservation Act right now has to do with very significant impacts coming primarily from mining operations in northeastern Minnesota and the difficulty of replacing those impacts in a quality manner close to the site of impacts. What we're concerned about this bill is prior to the final drafting, that final small group that was discussed, there were elements in there that required that the rules and regulations, including those that are proposed to be amended and improved here in this bill, would apply to all of the entities across the state. Unfortunately, dating back to the origins of the bill in 1991, the mining industry in Minnesota operates under a different regulator. Department of Natural Resources Mineral Division is in charge of interpreting and enforcing the laws, unlike every other entity statewide. And we believe that that's actually the source of some of the major problems that we've been hearing about. What our board recommends are ideas that have been thoroughly discussed and debated in these committees but disappeared at the final drafting. It includes making the wetland rules and regulations apply to all individuals and industries equally across the state, making DNR equivalent to a local governmental unit for purposes of this legislation. Eliminate the ill-advised merging for regulatory purposes of two major northeastern watersheds, which result in some of the mitigation occurring very far from the site of impact, such as in Lake of the Woods County and Aiken County. And finally, requiring that all wetland mitigation that does take place outside of a watershed of impact actually use these high-priority areas, which the bill very rightly calls for the identification and creation of. Unfortunately, the bill is silent on what purpose these high-priority areas are. I note that the Corps of Engineers sent a letter to Mr. Wirens and the Board of Water and Soil Resources last Friday, and the committee might ask for that if you wish. But in that letter, the Corps of Engineers agrees with the Isaac Walton League and says that the purpose, they use their own terms, I'm using my own language here, but the purpose of these high-priority areas is to be utilized when one mitigates outside the watershed. These are fundamental flaws in this bill that caused our board to be unable to support the bill as written at this time, and we urge your consideration of it. We realize that wetland policy and wetland work is often a long time process, and we'd like to see as much done as is possible. One thing that I'd like to just close with is I realize this is not a funding committee, a finance committee, but it is critical, and I hope that the governor's supplemental budget provides very significant funding for this. This work cannot be done well on the cheap. We need the knowledge. We need the information. We need the understanding of our watersheds and where to target wetland restoration, and that all takes money. And obviously, this bill doesn't contain it as it's a policy bill, but we really hope that that will be forthcoming.
Thank you, Mr. Arnasti. Any questions for our testifier? Seeing none, Paula McAbee, Water Legacy. Ms. McAbee, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, members of the committee. Water Legacy has only been around since 2009, but I've been doing this work for more than 35 years. And I'm not an expert in wetlands, but I am an expert in privilege and how certain corporations circumvent the rules that apply to everyone else. And I think reading, I was not invited to be at the stakeholder sessions, but I was at all of them anyhow. And I think the continuous discussion has been that the way in which mitigation has been done in northeastern Minnesota has been ecologically unwise and has been unsatisfactory to the areas where that mitigation has been exported. So I share with the Isaac Walton League the sense that if we are doing anything at all, the most important priority is to say there is one set of rules for wetland mitigation. It applies to mining like it applies to counties, like it applies to every other industry. And a few changes in defining local government units and making sure that DNR has to go through the, follow the Bowser rules and go through the same appeal process as any other local government unit would go an enormous long way to letting our experts who are working with Bowser do their job and make sure that wetland projects make sense. I have another series of thoughts. My dad used to say, he died last year, but he used to say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And nothing I've heard today from the author, from the agency, from the county, from anyone suggests that this bill is anything but excellent intentions. But as a lawyer and a contrarian, I believe that the two most important goals that were articulated, namely following the watershed approach and being consistent with the federal framework, are both missed in this bill. And not missed because people wanted to miss them, but because the language is not right. And I did pass out, I don't know if I have enough copies for everyone, a letter that I got just about an hour before I came down here today from Tim Smith at the Corps of Engineers. And he articulated, and I'm going to quote a few pieces of his letter and then refer to a couple things in the bill that I'm doing from memory that I think need to be changed. The Corps of Engineers has said that they support high priority replacement, but their concern is our support for this option remains predicated on an understanding that only when a project proponent has demonstrated to the satisfaction of the agencies that there are no practicable mitigation opportunities available in the watershed of impact should mitigation be allowed to move to a priority area. Now, I think this is what the staff at Bowser understand, but it is not what the statute says now, and it should say that. And that would go a long way to reassuring many of us that this is not going to be a race to the bottom. It's going to be an attempt to do important things across Minnesota. Second, in terms of the alternative options, things other than wetland replacement that could be done in northeastern Minnesota, like meandering a trout stream, for example, or restoring a riparian buffer. Initially, Water Legacy was really skeptical, and we talked to a number of experts, and they said as long as this was limited so that only northeastern Minnesota could be affected, that's a good idea. Because then if you run into a problem with 100 acres of wetlands, there are other issues right there in the St. Louis River watershed that can be addressed. That's the same thing that the Corps of Engineers says in Section 5 at the bottom of page 1. We believe these alternative options should be limited to northeastern Minnesota where a need has been clearly established. And that way, it's not an excuse to get out of the watershed. It's a way to do some good if you've run out of other options. And then on page 2, there's a lot of complexity here, so I'm just going to summarize. But if you look at paragraph 2 and paragraph 3 on page 2 of the letter from the Army Corps of Engineers, the basic bottom line is that the federal approach is a watershed approach. And there are a few places in the language having to do with wetlands banking and actually having to do with the very definition of other actions. If other actions said you can do other actions to restore the functions and services within the watershed, then all of a sudden this other actions thing becomes aligned with the federal purpose. Similarly, and I think that in this case, the Army Corps of Engineers is not really disagreeing as much as saying our policy at the St. Paul level is if it's a individual project, you start with a 10-digit, what they call the 10-digit HUC code, but it's really like the small watersheds. If you're doing wetland banking, you start with the big watersheds like the St. Louis River, which they call 8-digit HUC codes. And what the current law, the current bill would do is it removes the phrasing watershed and it doesn't define it. So what we are concerned about at Water Legacy is let's not start huge. Let's start the way the federal government says in the regulations and also in the policy of the St. Paul District. Let's start small and try and fix whatever's lost as close to the site of impact as possible. Finally, I think there's some real questions about how these ratios are going to be set, and there's not really any guidance in the law about that. And so the concern of the Corps of Engineers is that this legislation might be a black box. And here on page 3 are some of the language that highlights that. Second, the mitigation ratios established under the Section 404, that's the federal program, are intended to replace functions lost as a result of the authorized impact. Setting ratios in a manner to encourage the location of replacement in certain areas of the state departs from a truly functional replacement approach. If enacted, I anticipate that the state and federal mitigation requirements would diverge, since I don't think such an approach could be adopted for our program. And finally, the Army Corps cautioned that in the context of streamlining and efficiency that has become integral to all aquatic resource regulation in Minnesota in the past several years, I anticipate that this proposal would only add complexity and uncertainty for the public as they try to understand the requirements and explore the various options available to them. Water Legacy is not just talking about the things that we think are missing, which is putting the mining companies on the same footing as everybody else. We think that that step alone would solve two-thirds of your problem. The other part of the problem, which is to allow alternative mitigation within northeastern Minnesota, has to be limited to northeastern Minnesota and to replacing the functions and services within the watershed. The high priority issue, we discussed in one of our stakeholder meetings, and that was November 17th, the idea that we should simply preclude going outside a basin service area unless it was a high priority area. And if we strengthened the watershed approach and then went to that step, I think there'd be possibility that Water Legacy could even support this bill. So thank you so much. I hope I haven't taken more time than I'm supposed to.
Thank you, Ms. McAbee. Are there any questions for our testifier? Thank you for coming in. If not, Josh Stromland, Jane Ryer, and then John Hottinger, and then it looks like I think there's a couple more after that. Lance Ness, and then I think Wayne Brandt back. So Josh and Jane, come on down, and John, you're in the batter's deck. So he's dead. Josh, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Josh Strum. I'm with Lakewoods County Land and Water Planning Office. I would like to thank you for this opportunity to discuss wetland issues with you today. Last session, I provided testimony in the House on how the process has not worked so well on a project called Williams Creek. Since that time, I've been involved with the stakeholders process, and I appreciate the efforts of all the agencies involved and the interest in hearing from Greater Minnesota today. While the proposed bill addresses some of the key points, it certainly omits other critical points that were discussed during the stakeholders process. And the three critical points are as follows, and I don't want to be redundant, but it appears that these three points have already been discussed in length. One is the bank service areas, commonly referred to the Superior Basin or the Rainy Basin. These are large areas of many, many watersheds that comprised, and just for technical terms, they're bank service areas. They need to be separated. Current language that was drafted in the stakeholders process had these two sunset. There was a sunset date that separated the two, but now that language has been omitted and removed. Wetland banking replacement ratios are based upon these bank service areas. However, as the testifier that just got done talking about, project specific, which is what lands and minerals and the mining companies typically go under, the replacement ratios are based upon major watersheds. And major watersheds make up these basins. So essentially what is happening, if we refer to 4.12 in the proposed bill all the way through 4.15, this is language that was proposed to be separated and the sunset clause established. So under a permit to mine, essentially what's taking place is the replacement of the wetlands are occurring hundreds of miles away from the impact site without any local involvement or approval. Why is there a different process for lands and minerals than a private landowner? The second point is establishing the high priority areas within the wetland replacement siting criteria, and the siting criteria is under 103G.222 subdivision 3. That language also had been removed from the stakeholders process into the current bill. If the high priority areas are not included in the siting criteria, there is no incentive to develop wetland mitigation sites in those areas. And the siting criteria basically, as everybody has kind of alluded to, you start small, close to the impact site, and you gradually work out. Well, before and if the in-lieu fee program is established, we can go to these high priority areas. The high priority areas will provide hundreds of thousands of acres of possible mitigation. Without establishment of these high priority areas in the siting criteria, poor quality and low public value wetland mitigation will continue. Third point is amending state statute to make DNR lands and minerals a local government unit for project-specific wetland replacement under a permit to mine. During the 2011 session, 103G.005 subdivision 10E was amended to establish DNR as a local government unit for wetland banking projects established solely for replacing wetland impacts under a permit to mine under section 93.481. Again, why does lands and minerals follow a different process that allows for mitigation to occur without local approval? Essentially, what lands and minerals would become if they become an LGE or local government unit for project specific is that levels the playing field. That's all we're asking, is a level playing field for all the rest of the local government units established in the state of Minnesota. In closing, I'd be happy to discuss the details of these topics at your convenience. I hope it is not too late to make the necessary changes that will have a positive change on our natural resources from a statewide perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stromlin. And if you want to email to our committee administrator, Barb Jacobs, that would be wonderful. That would be great. And she can get you her address, her email address. So, Senator Marty, next is Jane Ryer. Let me go back. Any questions, comments for our testifier? No? Jane Ryer from Save Lake Superior Association, welcome. And then, John, up after this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jane Ryer. I'm here from Duluth on behalf of Save Lake Superior Association, which is an organization of about 300 members that was originally formed in the 1970s to fight the dumping of taconite tailings in Lake Superior. It's remained a local voice for protection of the Lake Superior Basin, including the St. Louis River, and they've sent me down here today to speak on behalf of the St. Louis River. So I'd like to thank you for allowing me to speak. Save Lake Superior Association starts from the premise that the purpose of mitigation is to replace the wetland functions that are lost when wetlands are destroyed. Because that loss occurs to a particular watershed, We take the position that effective wetland mitigation can only be done in the impacted watershed. And quite clearly, that's not happening in the Lake Superior Basin, or in the particularly in the St. Louis River watershed right now. And unfortunately, we do not believe that this bill includes the provisions that would allow that to enable that to change. We really, I echo Paula Maccabee's statement that we do believe that Bowser's intention with this bill is to encourage better mitigation within watersheds, but we do not believe that this bill will have that outcome. We believe that this bill will simply provide more ways to allow the loss of thousands of acres of wetlands in the St. Louis River watershed without requiring replacement of the services those wetlands provide to the watershed. So I'll say just a couple more things about that later, but the primary thing I'd like to get across today is the scale at which the DNR and the Army Corps of Engineers expect to permit wetland destruction in northeast Minnesota in the coming years and what that means for the St. Louis River. I sometimes wonder if people really understand the level of devastation that we're talking about here. Bowser uses an estimate of projected losses from mining in the next 20 years or so of 4,100 acres, but this estimate does not include many of the losses that we already know are going to occur. For instance, it does not include losses from drainage at the Polymet project. It does not include the tailings basin that's being proposed by Twin Metals. In reality, the losses are likely to be at least twice as much as the Bowser estimate. To put this in perspective, using Bowser's estimate, we are at least doubling the rate of wetland destruction along the St. Louis River that's been occurring in the past few decades. A more realistic estimate is that we're quadrupling the destruction that has been allowed up until now. As far as I've been able to determine, no other river system in the contiguous 48 states has faced this amount and intensity of permitted wetland destruction since the Clean Water Act was passed. We're looking at losses of thousands of acres, while other states measure their very largest losses in the tens or low hundreds of acres. When we lose wetlands, we lose very particular environmental services within the watershed where the wetlands are located. These include filtering contaminants, flood attenuation, and water storage to provide base flow to streams during dry periods. Obviously, the functions cannot be replaced by restoring wetlands in another watershed. In addition, for wildlife, in addition to providing habitat, very large wetlands of the type that are being slated for destruction also have a local cooling effect and provide cooler microclimates in the summer, which is increasingly important to species like the moose. And at this point, moose habitat cannot be replaced outside of the northeast corner of the state. I know that some of those supporting this bill believe that it will encourage more mitigation within the St. Louis River watershed for the losses that occur there. But the bill also allows mitigation to continue outside the watershed and may even encourage that practice by encouraging restoration in high-priority areas. The federal mitigation rule encourages mitigation plans that will do the most good for the impacted watershed. But the question in Minnesota has become not what will do the most good, but what will be the least expensive. And there is no fix for that in this bill. What we see is that despite priority areas, despite in-lieu fee systems, you know, whatever they are, the mining companies are still going to go after the least expensive alternative, and there's nothing in this bill that is going to prevent them from doing that, and we fear that means that they're just going to continue going outside of the basin. And I think that's it for me today. I thank you very much for hearing me, and greetings from Duluth.
Thank you, Ms. Ryer, for driving down from Duluth. Any questions for our testifier? Seeing none, next up is Senator John Hottinger representing the Sierra Club. You know, Senator, Welcome back. You used to chair this committee, I believe, some 15 years ago. Am I correct on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the welcome back. I did not have the privilege of chairing this particular committee, although I chaired committees in this room. but not that one.
You
Senator
were on this
Marty
committee.
Was the clear better choice.
I love it. Welcome back, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And my name is John Hottinger. And I'm here to testify on behalf of the North Star chapter of the Sierra Club. Chair Hoffman said you expected to be done by 8, so I should be able to complete my testimony in plenty of time. On a more serious note, much of what I had to say has already been said, and I'm not going to repeat it for you. But I want to congratulate the members who are still here. I appreciate that you're showing the respect for Minnesota's wetlands that this discussion deserves. Whether you all agree or not is another story, but as you heard, not all of us who were involved in the process agree on everything in this bill. As I said, I represent the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club North Star Chapter is the leading grassroots voice to preserve and protect Minnesota's environment with over 14,000 members. Our positions are developed by a member-driven process that incorporates the opportunity for all those members to participate. Through that process, after deliberation and analysis, our legislative committee makes final determinations, which were made last night on this bill, and their decision was to oppose it, or at least oppose it the way it's been presented. You've heard a lot about the stakeholder process, and it was a lengthy one and an inclusive one, and the work product can be found in detail on the Bowser website. It's pretty impressive. Sierra Club had members who spent literally hundreds of hours involved in that process, and near the end, we submitted a letter with about 10 to 12 suggestions that we thought were really important to incorporate into the final product. As Ms. Bathke talked about, there was a group then that got together by invitation, and they put together a kind of a consensus bill. We weren't part of that consensus, and we disagree with some of the provisions in it. I would agree with Ms. Bathke, and I think we the Sierra Club would too, that this presents a potential for a modest improvement, a small step, a potential step forward. Unfortunately, it's a lost opportunity. And in that respect, it's a major disappointment. This isn't the perfect bill. It's not the dream bill, but we have the good fortune at the Sierra Club to try and find that dream bill. That's why we put in so much time. You're all familiar with, and you all care about the wetlands. I don't doubt that. But with current changes in our world, they're becoming even more important, not less important. With early melting that you may have noticed has been going on in full scale today, small wetlands become rich in invertebrates, providing necessary life-giving food for reproducing waterfowl and their hatchlings. With increased climate disruption, resulting in more extreme weather events, wetlands help absorb extreme floods, augmenting water flow during droughts, and continuing to provide the filtering to protect and enhance water quality. They are more valuable than ever before. And as the chairman and author said when he introduced the bill, that frankly only increases the need to replace lost wetlands with wetlands in the same watershed. The loss of those wetlands are not isolated. They include the impacts on the entire watershed. And any weakening of that, we believe, which is taking place somewhat from our perspective in the current bill, is a step backwards. We applaud Governor Dayton's stated desire to assess potential changes to current policies that will improve wetland conservation in Minnesota in a manner that maintains and restores the integrity of Minnesota's wetlands. We hope that work that went into that process yields a higher level of results and improvements. We have many of the objections that have been heard, but just let me name a couple of them without explanation. The continued linkage of banking sectors 1 and 2 in northern Minnesota only expands opportunities to not help the watershed in efforts to try and mitigate the wetland. That's been talked about for years, and they should be split. And I think there's a wide belief that that's something of value. We also have concerns about the alternatives about the way the language on the prioritizing and the in-lieu fee. There's the potential of providing some positive, but there's also the potential of providing more excuses not to put the wetland replacement in the watershed from whence it came. You know, the reality in wetlands is the folks who are seeking to mitigate because they're making commercial impact that destroys or harms wetlands, they prefer, and it's kind of what the commissioner said, they prefer finding a place that's easy to replace and inexpensive. Well, wetlands are important enough that sometimes it's going to be difficult, and sometimes it's going to be expensive to replace those wetlands. We can't let people get off the hook. Finally, there's a bill that Representative Simonson has. It may be also, I didn't check, I didn't have a chance. There may be a Senate companion that gives money up front for mitigation instead of going through all sorts of machinations and indecisiveness in terms of what will work and what won't. As other bills get to the Finance Committee, that ought to be into the play into the discussion, to find a way to make sure that the best wetland mitigation is undertaken, and especially in the places where it's the most used. I appreciate your time and your attention, and once again want to thank the members who are still here for the respect they're showing to Minnesota wetlands.
Thank you, Senator Hottinger. And next we have Lance. Any questions, folks, for the former Assistant Majority Leader? No, for Majority Leader, I should say. Lance Ness and Wayne Brandt. And then I don't have anybody else on the list, Senator Marty. So this is it.
Oh, come on.
Mr. Ness, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance. That's a group that was formed in 1985 by members of the Governor's Commission on Hunting and Fishing, and we've been around ever since then. I'll keep my statement very short today. Our position right now is neutral. We can't support the bill in its current form. We have some problems with it. The bill really doesn't do anything for fish and wildlife that we can see, and especially moose habitat and populations. It would seem that the wetlands that would be destroyed would be prime moose habitat, and that the restorations would take place in some other part of the state. And so we think we have a great loss there. Since 1991, it's been the policy of the state to implement a no-net loss policy of wetlands to save what we have, which we commonly call protect, keep working wetlands working, which we refer to as maintain, and to restore and add to the base amount of the wetlands that we have left, which we refer to as enhancement. The question is, have we really reached no net loss, or are we continuing to destroy wetlands? I haven't got a good answer to that from anybody, Mr. Chairman and members. No one can actually tell me that we've reached no net loss. So one of our suggestions, if you want to improve the bill, you might want to increase any out-of-watershed mitigation or replacement to double or triple the ratio of replacement from 1-to-1 to 3 or 4-to-1, so we can actually restore and enhance and maintain real working wetlands. This would be some progress towards a known net loss goal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ness. Next, any questions for Mr. Ness? Seeing none, Mr. Brandt, welcome back.
Good to be here, Mr. Chairman. Wayne Brandt, Minnesota Timber Producers Association, Minnesota Forest Industries is the last on the agenda. I will try and be brief. Some of my friends really like lots of the stuff that's in here, and some of my friends hate some of the stuff that's in here, and we stand firmly with our friends on this issue, and we'll try and offer a few cogent observations. In going through the bill, and I was a participant in the public stakeholders group, all of those meetings over the interim, but not the private discussions. Maybe it's occasionally cantankerous nature about some of these topics. I think we should be clear in the bill about a few of the things. You know, when you look at Section 5, and I would I think there's only a few of us left in this room that sat through the 3 days and three nights, like Lance and I were there, of the 1991 Conference Committee. Thank goodness former Senator Lessard had a couch right through that wall a couple of rooms back that some of us napped on occasionally when former Senator Lessard wasn't there, of course. When you look at Section 5, I think it just ought to be clear that one of the things this bill does is the language that's stricken changes that we're going to replace wetlands with wetlands. You know, that's a policy decision for the legislature, but you know, you ought to be clear that that is broadened out with that language change. You know, we moving back further into the bill in Section 9, pages 10 and 11. You know, we appreciate the language on page 11, starting 11.2 on the in-lieu payment program. First, that it's obviously got to be appropriated by the legislature, and that it be used for establishing replacement wetlands, because that's kind of what some of us always thought the Wetland Conservation Act was supposed to be about. We are concerned when you look on page 12, section 5, line 12.11, the language in greater than 80% counties, which is, you know, the bulk of the forested land of the state, restoration, protection of streams, riparian buffers, and habitat corridors that are important to the functions and sustainability of aquatic resources. You know, we certainly understand restoration and protection of streams. When you start getting into riparian buffers, those are not defined here. So we're not sure if they would relate to the riparian protections that exist through the Forest Resources Council guidelines, which are basically in the riparian areas almost universally applied in the forested section. So, you know, we can certainly see the opportunity for improvements to stream habitats if there are forest lands that have been degraded in those 80% counties, of having projects that would improve those riparian buffers. We think it's getting a little further afield when you start talking habitat corridors. Not exactly sure what that how that relates to wetlands. You know, most, you know, nearly 60% of the forest land in these 80% counties is already in public hands, either through the DNR, the Forest Service, or the counties. They do all do, to varying degrees, excellent jobs of managing those lands for habitats, and we're not really sure why we need Bowser in that mix with the DNR, with the county land departments, with the Forest Service and the private landowners. So I think there's some ways to, you know, improve this bill. I mean, I conveyed these concerns to Senator Marty earlier, and, you know, we want to continue to work on this as we have for many years on these wetland issues. So thank you for the opportunity, and I won't keep you longer.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. Any questions for our testifier? Seeing none, Senator Marty. Thank you, Mr. Brandt.
Mr. Chair, you can see this is a well-loved bill.
I'm feeling that, Senator Marty. Lots of discussion and
Mr. Chair, I think a lot of good points were made. I want to say that I do hope that the Section 1 of the bill, the stakeholder coordination, trying to continue making progress forward on this is important. I think this bill is a step forward. Probably think, as Bathke's description, a small step forward. It's a tough challenge. There, I'm also concerned that, but for this, we'd be going backwards in some areas. I think this is, on balance, a small step forward with a lot of work that should be done. And I would love to address a lot of those other concerns, but I don't think this year that's going to happen, and I think this bill is a step forward, and I'd urge your support for it. And I'll leave it at that.
So, Senator Marty, it sounds like this is going to go to state and local.
I believe that would be the next step.
So, does do you want to?
I will move the bill be recommended to pass and sent to the state and local committee.
Senator Marty moves Senate File 1515, Wetland Conservation Act modification, to pass and go to state and local. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Senator Marty, thank you.
Mr. Chair, we were going to try and get out of here by 6, but we're relatively close.
Seeing no other actions in front of us, we are adjourned.